The Escape Pod. Let's go on a trip through time to see what tomorrow looked like yesterday.
Preparing escape pod for launch.
Today was yesterday's tomorrow.
Pressurizing.
Where we are now used to be the unimaginable future.
Fuel.
Nominal.
And today's outdated entertainment used to be yesterday's state of the art.
Power.
Nominal.
Sifting through science fact and science fiction, from outdated technology to the birth of the future. Let's get away from it all for a few minutes by going back the way we came, into logbook.com's escape pod. The logbook.com's escape pod is once again in orbit, observing the futuristic, the fantastic, and the formative moments in geek history. I'm Earl Green, and it's time once again to see what tomorrow looked like yesterday. On this day in 1977, Soyuz 24 lifted off from the Soviet Union, bound for space station Salyut 5. Since the previous crew had bailed out in 1976 in an incident that was rumored to be caused by toxic fumes aboard the station, the two cosmonauts from Soyuz 24 boarded the station with special breathing gear on. Though they left Salyut 5 ready for another crew, the station fell out of orbit before another crew could be launched. In 1984, NASA astronaut Bruce McCandless became a one-man satellite as he launched himself from the cargo bay of Space Shuttle Challenger wearing the manned maneuvering unit jetpack.
Houston, this is EV-1. Are you reading? Over.
Roger, Bruce. We're reading you loud and clear.
The two shuttle astronauts are now in the airlock, depressurizing that sealed-off part of the shuttle before opening the outside hatch for their spacewalk. The only problem, mysterious Morse code signals have been interfering with the shuttle's radio signals.
So, sure, Roger, we're receiving Morse code. We're getting that in. Can we get a da-da-da-da?
November, Yankee, Golf.
And they really don't know where those signals are coming from right now. It's no problem, though. They switch to a backup frequency. Any minute now, the two spacewalkers should step outside the hatch. Astronauts Bruce McCandless and Bob Stewart are now about to step outside of the Challenger. Mission Control is watching through a television camera mounted on the shuttle's robot arm, watching the hatch open up right now.
We're getting our first live pictures from Challenger, and there he is, Bruce McCandless. Backpack strapped on, the jets flashing as he practices movements up and down and left and right. Let's bring up some of the ear to ground, see if you can hear him.
That may have been one small step for Neil, but it's a heck of a big leap for me.
A television camera mounted on Challenger's robot arm has been beaming back to Mission Control's Star Wars images so clear that ground controllers at times have seen the expression on the astronaut's face. And right now we're seeing a picture of McCandless flying with the Earth in the background and nothing else in the picture. It looks and sounds spectacular. How does it work?
Ed, what's it do? You sure have a nice flying machine here.
Yeah, sure, Bruce. It looks like a real friendly machine, real solid, real stable, and looks like you did a good job with all that engineering work over those years.
A big moment for Bruce McCandless. He's the man who helped build the backpack. He's now flying around the Challenger.
The MMU had been in development since the days of Gemini, and a prototype had been tested aboard Skylab. But this was its first real test in space. After the Challenger disaster, NASA decided that the manned maneuvering unit was too risky, and it was used on only three missions in total. In 1991, Soviet space station Salyut 7, the last of the Salyut stations and the direct forerunner to Mir, plunged through the atmosphere and broke up during re-entry, with only a few pieces surviving all the way to the ground where they landed, mostly in Argentina. Salyut 7 had been in orbit for almost a decade. In 2001, Space Shuttle Atlantis lifted off to install NASA's Destiny Laboratory module at the International Space Station.
Go from 8 engine start. 4, 3, 2, 1. Zero and liftoff of Space Shuttle Atlantis with Destiny, science laboratory for the 21st century.
Houston now controlling.
Houston Atlantis, roll program.
Roger, roll Atlantis.
In 2008, Atlantis returned to space with another lab module for the ISS, this time constructed by the European Space Agency. But in 2013, science and science fiction collided when the International Space Station was hailed by the captain of the Enterprise.
I'm calling. This is Shatner. Do you hear me?
Mr. Shatner, this is the Space Research Vessel, ISS.
in Earth orbit. And yes, I hear you loud and clear. How do you hear me? This is Chris Hadfield.
Chris, I hear you loud and clear. It's such a pleasure to talk to you. Do you find yourself in the space station observing, as a scientist, a part of it, a removed from it, or are you able to be to see the unifying parts of it so that you become at one with the universe?
You never saw it on stage while you were filming, but the view that they used to put in for us watching Star Trek of how the world looks out of Sulu and Chekhov's windows there, that's how the world looks. It's an enormous, wonderful, rolling Earth below us. But all you have to do is flip yourself upside down, and suddenly the rest of the universe is right there at your feet below you. And that's where the engineer in me, of course, is very much thinking about the ship and how we got here and the problems and the difficulties. But the human within me recognizes what we are in between. We've gone from climbing a hill, getting in an airplane, to now actually being right on the cusp of permanently leaving our planet.
Born on this day in 1908, the first actor to play both Buck Rogers and Flash Gordon on the big screen, Buster Crabbe. He even handed things over to Gil Gerard in a 1979 episode of Buck Rogers in the 25th Century.
Hey, nice double-teaming over there, whoever you are.
Gordon's the name, thanks.
We met Gordon?
I don't think so, Captain. We're from different times.
Cosmonaut Konstantin Fyokostov was born today in 1926. He flew the Voskhod 1 mission. Director Alejandro Jodorowsky, who attempted and eventually abandoned a big-screen adaptation of Frank Herbert's Dune in the 1970s, was born today in 1929. Apollo 15 astronaut Al Warden was born in 1932. Actor Gareth Hunt, one of the stars of the New Avengers, was born in 1943. And born in 1960, actor James Spader. In 1974, an agreement was struck between the Smithsonian and Paramount Pictures to donate the original filming model of Star Trek's Starship Enterprise to the Air and Space Museum that the Smithsonian planned to open in 1976. 18 feet long and weighing 275 pounds, the Enterprise was handed over to the Smithsonian for free, so long as the museum ate a bill for $500 for shipping and handling. The model was 10 years old at this point, having been constructed in 1964 for the pilot episode, The Cage. And in 1994, gossip was brewing in the lower decks of the Enterprise on Star Trek The Next Generation.
Shabet Tark, what I can't understand is why we're just sitting here so close to the Cardassian border.
It must have something to do with that escape pod we picked up. Don't you think, Cito?
Maybe.
Wonder who was in it.
You know what I heard? It was Ambassador Spock.
That is most unlikely.
That's what I was told.
By whom?
I can't say.
They beamed whoever was in it straight to sickbay.
You can read about these events and many more on thelogbook.com's ever-evolving timeline of geek history. If you want to witness video game history unfolding firsthand, thelogbook.com is the place to do it. With downloadable videos from the comprehensive chronology of Phosphor Dot Fossils to the origin stories of the industry told by those who lived it in the best of CGE videos. Previously available only on DVD, you can now download the specific videos you want to see. You can pick up other original books, ebooks, and videos, and hundreds of other titles in the logbook.com store anytime. Thanks for listening to the Escape Pod.
Commencing Escape Pod Landing Procedure. The logbook.com Escape Pod was written and produced by Earl Payne.